The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Bahati Mutisia for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazine. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Teen Vogue. Our first article is an interview with actress China McClain, and it's titled, China Ann McClain Unpacks Black Lightning End, Loss, and Finding Herself. This is by Staran Roque and Kendall Besant. China Ann McClain was 10 years old when she met her best friend. Aside from her two sisters, Cameron Boyce, who would become her co-star in Disney's wildly popular Descendants film series after working with him on the 2010 comedy Grown Ups, was one of her closest friends. He was her chosen family, a confidant in an industry that has little empathy toward child stars. In July 2019, when he suddenly passed away from a fatal seizure, everything changed for China. At 22, China now is the living embodiment of Tozak Shang's immortal words, I found God in myself and I love her. I loved her fiercely. China didn't exactly say it that way, but it's hard not to get chills when she talks about how she is changing her mindset, once tainted by insecurities, grappling with grief, and stepping into who she wants to be. That latter part is still in development, but the China we know today, the one we love watching on TikTok and the CW's Black Lightning, is starting to come into this more self-described position version of her, more self-described positive version of herself when she made the decision to cut off her hair. In the case of China's big chop, the ubiquitous Coco Chanel quote about what happens when women cut their hair is true. It really did change my life. It gave me this feeling of freedom that I hadn't felt previously. The only feeling I felt that compared to it was the type of freedom in finding God and building a relationship with him, China tells Teen Vogue over the phone. I never would have cut it when I was younger for a few different reasons. It was a security blanket to me. I was a black girl with long hair. It was down my back, and I always had people commenting on it like, is that all your hair? It's so pretty. But at some point, I realized that I was hiding behind it for that reason. China also literally hid behind her hair due to acne, which she was able to hide under her tresses, and it stopped her from doing things that she wanted to do, like going swimming, for example. I would have to spend 3 hours doing my hair afterward, so it was holding me back, I felt, in a lot of ways, emotionally, spiritually, and just from doing some of the things I wanted to do when I wanted to do them, China explained. Then one day, her confidence arrived. Inspiration struck, she cut her hair, and she has no plans on growing it back anytime soon. My family was so supportive of me, and it was a whole year before I actually told the world and my fans that I cut it off, she chirps. She made her public debut with her new look at San Diego Comic-Con summer 2019. At that time, the pain of losing Cameron was new, and she was still learning how to navigate life as a public figure bogged down by grief. She posted a tearful video on social media explaining how profoundly impacted she was by Cameron's loss. Today, nearly 2 years later, it's still hard for her to talk about, and she nearly comes to tears while breaking down what it feels like to still be working through grief. Cameron was my first time really coming in contact with death when it came to somebody I really loved and knew closely. I didn't really know how to handle it, says China. It was just like he was here one day and gone the next, and I had to wrap my mind around that I would never see him again in this life. I'm still dealing with that, to be honest. I don't think I'm ever going to not deal with that, But I adore him. I love him. I still do. I always will. As a woman of faith, China is content that Cameron is in the place that she's trying to get to one day. And while he is open to talking about most things, while she is open to talking about most things, there are some things she'd rather keep to herself, particularly about her continued friendship with Cameron. He's not here physically, but he lingers in her heart and still makes his presence known every now and then. I have stories I want to keep to myself. I don't know if I'm going to tell anybody, but I know that he's around, says China. I'm proud of the life that he lived, and I'm pretty sure that everybody who knew him could say the same thing. But I mostly find myself thinking about his family because they lost something that the rest of us didn't. One of the biggest lessons that Cameron taught her was to let go. The concept of releasing unnecessary baggage is part of how she's able to move on in an industry that often makes it difficult to feel human. I was so tied up in working and getting ahead. And I was so tied up in that because I really do love acting. I don't like this industry, but I love creating things, creating art, she explains. And whether it be acting, singing, dancing, painting, sketching, sculpting, I love all those things, and I do them in my free time. So I just think Cameron's death made me step back, and now I don't live for those things anymore. I don't live for, let me make sure I accomplish this, and let me work. Now, I just focus on things around me and focus on this moment and put it in God and my family. And whatever happens with the industry happens. I'm just going to keep creating things. She shares that one of the most ultimate tests of her faith came when God told her it was time to step away from Black Lightning just before shooting what is now the fourth and final season. China says she got the message before anyone knew the show was going into its last season. Shortly after, she made peace with trusting the divine revelation that it was time to leave. It was announced that Black Lightning was ending as we know it, giving away to spinoffs featuring certain characters. I've always focused on other people's projects first, things that I was cast in, but things that didn't belong to me. It was time for me to go and focus on some of the other projects that have been in my back pocket for a long time. But I've always focused on other people's projects first, things that I was cast in, but things that didn't belong to me, she says. I have a lot of stories that I want to tell that I think are going to help a lot of these kids that are constantly tweeting me and leaving comments on my TikToks and Instagram posts about where they are in life and how they've hit an all-time low and how they're depressed and how they're anxious and stressed and they can't seem to get out of it. I have projects that could actually help them and help those things. It was just time to go. And time to focus on my babies that I'm developing with my production company and my family. McLean has not revealed the name of her family's production company yet, stating it's still a work in progress because it needs to be a name with meaning. The McLean family is also working on music as China's entire clan, including her mom and dad, sing and or play instruments, and they all live together. The creative jam sessions are never ending. But in case anyone is wondering, particularly after an Instagram video she posted explaining her thoughts on the show ending, China's time on Black Lightning has been a positive experience. She names Nafessa Williams, who plays Thunder, her stunt double, Cassie, and Chantal Thai, who plays Gracie Choi, and in addition to the crew, as entities she will miss the most. However, the former child star and Disney kid emeritus who is stepping into adult stardom is excited about what's next. The global pandemic has slowed life down for everyone, but China is okay with that. She is obviously still working, but her true idea of fun is staying home, kicking it with her family and or friends, making TikTok videos, which she's really good at, or playing Among Us with her fans. She also continues to nurture her creative passions, which include singing, sculpting, dancing, painting, and most importantly, faith. All of the above have kept her grounded in a chaotic industry known for breaking too many visionaries before their time. She's confident that she is headed in the way she should go. I haven't always been as close to God as I am now, but he's the main reason why I have peace when I'm not on a set somewhere, China says. Because I only used to have peace when I was somewhat distracted, when I was working and kind of working and operating on all autopilot. But I don't do that anymore. I can sit alone and be with my thoughts and be with myself and have peace in this indescribable joy because I know God. It's about perspective a lot of times because I was focusing on a lot of the wrong things and valued a lot of the wrong things over things that I should have been focusing on and valuing. So now I'm just able to enjoy life without trying to rush anything and get ahead. Get ahead to what? Just live. The next article is titled, Meghan Markle's Experience with the Royal Family Shows the Reach of Anti-Blackness. This article is by Beatrice Valero de Urquia, and it was published March 10th, 2021. In this op-ed, Beatrice Valero de Urquia unpacks the racism that's seemingly inherent to the British monarchy, as we saw in Meghan Markle's recent Oprah interview. Britain's greatest enemy is apparently an outspoken black woman. On March 7th, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex sat down with Oprah Winfrey for one of the most raw and revealing interviews that a member of the British royal family has ever made. Although there was huge expectation about what Meghan Markle and Prince Harry would say in their first sit-down with Oprah, nothing could have prepared the world for what they shared. Their truth, including the rampant racism that's seemingly inherent to the institution. In her descriptions of racist treatment by the public and the palace, it calls to question whether in society black women are safe if a black member of the royal family wasn't. Since Meghan's first public appearance as Prince Henry's partner, the former Suits actor has been harassed and hated by British tabloids. Only 1 week after making the relationship public in November 2016, Harry already felt the need to write a public statement calling out the smear on the front page of a national newspaper, the racial undertones of comment pieces, and the outright sexism and racism of social media trolls and web articles comments directed toward his then girlfriend. Over the following months, it only got worse. No matter what she did or said, Meghan was seemingly already guilty in the public eye. She wasn't able to put her hands in her pockets, have a traditional wedding bouquet, or hold her baby bump. When she said she liked avocados, it was met with claims that she was fueling drought and murder. In contrast, the health benefits of avocados were widely celebrated when Kate Middleton ate them. Even the decision to leave the royal family that the Duke and Duchess of Sussex made together was renamed Megxit, seemingly placing the blame solely on her. In more overtly racist incidents, Meghan was portrayed as gangster royalty, uppity, and having exotic DNA. Her Los Angeles upbringing was described as straight out of Compton, and her son was compared to a monkey. The tabloids implied time and time again that a black girl from the hood had no business marrying a British prince and faced little to no consequences for it. Evidently, the royal family's determination to protect the institution did not apply to Meghan. While Buckingham Palace was willing to open an investigation into the Times claim that Meghan bullied her staff, they weren't willing to help Meghan when she herself was being bullied. Prince Harry himself admitted that although his family could have shared some truth or called the dogs off, they chose silence, leaving Harry and Meghan feeling desperate and concerned about history repeating itself. In some ways, it already has. The parallels between Meghan and her late mother-in-law are immediately evident. In 1991, Princess Diana, Harry's mother, taped herself saying that she threw herself down the stairs when she was 4 months pregnant, out of sheer desperation, which some have said was a suicide attempt. In her interview with Oprah, Meghan opened up about experiencing suicidal ideation, so much so that she asked the palace for help. She, like Diana before her, was denied. Taking into account this context of public hatred and harassment, it may not come as a surprise that the racism the Duchess of Sussex faced extended to her son. Talking to Oprah, Meghan and Harry alleged that Archie was deliberately denied a royal title and therefore access to the protection that comes with it, putting his life potentially at risk. The couple even suggested that this decision was taken in light of the child's mixed-race heritage. In those months when I was pregnant, all around this same time, so we have in tandem the conversation of he won't be given security, he's not going to be given a title, and also concerns and conversations about how dark his skin might be when he was born, Meghan said. It was really hard to see those as compartmentalized conversations. It's hard to ignore that the royal family's treatment of Meghan echoes how Black people in Britain are treated. A 2020 Home Office report found that Black people in the UK were 5 times more likely to have force used on them by the police, and the Independent Office for Police Conduct found that Black people in England and Wales are nearly twice as likely to die while in custody. Black people in Bristol are significantly more likely to be homeless, unemployed, and victims of crime. If a Black woman isn't protected even when she's under the family's wing, how can our non-royal citizens ever feel safe? And how can these citizens feel safe speaking up against power? Well, maybe that's the point. The British press's hatred toward Meghan and the Crown's refusal to protect her seems like a sign of society's desire to silence Black women, and reveals a very painful truth about the racism embedded deep within British society. Truth about the racism embedded deep within British society. That it's still very much alive. The hope then lies within the people who are willing to call it for what it is. As Diana once did, Meghan has found her voice and is calling out the racism that she suffered. Now, it's time for us to listen and be better. Our next article is titled, These Indigenous Women Are Defining Wellness for Themselves. Mandy Martini Chiwalaf and Josie Valadez Freire are reclaiming wellness. This article is by Tamara Pridgett and was published March 10th, 2020. Wellness means something different for everyone, but for many, the concept brings to mind a similar image. Right now, we largely see cisgender, affluent, thin, white women centered in the wellness industry. Along with this homogenous look, wellness has grown into a multi-billion-dollar industry that's selling us a lifestyle rather than empowering us to live our own. But there's no one person who deserves to be well, nor is there one right way to go about it. As Black, Indigenous, and people of color continue to fight for racial justice and equity, and are disproportionately impacted by the coronavirus pandemic, some Indigenous people are reclaiming wellness, reminding us that the practice isn't something that can be sold. It's really essential for me to think about wellness as a daily practice, as a ritual, as a ceremony in and of itself, because everything in this world, in this system, actually works against my wellness, the wellness of my peoples. So I have to incorporate it as a day-to-day intentional practice. Josie Valadez Freire tells Teen Vogue. For Mandy Martini Chiuelef, which means mist over lake, a Mapuche writer and teacher, wellness is defined by the products or practices the wellness industry hawks. Wellness is the bond, the relationship that we have with ourselves and the land. Wellness, to me, is being able to listen. Our body and the land and basically the natural world that is all around us and within us keep speaking to us, she tells Teen Vogue. She also views wellness as the equilibrium of mind, body, spirit, and with nature and the animals. In Indigenous cultures, everything is connected, and everything has a role. We're part of an ecosystem, and understanding we are a collective, not just our families or people that look like us or walk on two legs. It's the collective of all that is life, Chiuelef says. For example, by caring for the trees, they in return care for us, she says. It's a bond. It's a relationship. It's mutual. And we are depending on each other. Wellness, in practice, for Chiuelef, is paying attention to how her body reacts to situations and listening to it. This is where she sees a vast distinction between how Indigenous communities practice wellness and healing versus those whose relationship with wellness is solely from a capitalistic point of view. Healing is a critical aspect of wellness, and it starts with the self, she says. When we heal ourselves, we're able to listen. And when we're able to listen, we can notice what else is around us, what's happening, what the natural world is telling us is going on, and what it needs from us. Being in nature and listening to the trees, the wind, and the rivers are the equivalent of meditation for Chiuelef. More importantly, it's an opportunity to connect. The plants, the land, the animals, and humans all have their own language. We just have to be present enough to hear it, she says. That's how we connect, and that's a state of us being. That's how we're reminded every day of what we're a part of. Listening is healing, and healing ourselves is healing the land. My wellness and that of our peoples is directly connected to our earth, Freire says. I think our earth really mirrors us for the conditions of this system, the conditions of this world, and so wellness for me looks like working directly with our earth, working directly with all of our relations. Earth is our most important doctor, healer, whatever you want to call her. Wellness is our earth. Our original instructions remind us to go back to her always, go back to earth and to all the earth beings. Her wellness and that of her people is so far outside of the white imagination which focuses so much on self-care, Freire says. And although self-care is a critical component of well-being and a radical form of resistance for Black, Indigenous, and people of color, Freire emphasizes that wellness can and should incorporate communal and interpersonal care. The way I like to also see wellness is as a collective opportunity to ensure that we are fueling ourselves, but then also offering and fueling others to make sure they're well. Where we're creating networks of mutual and consistent support so that we can rest easy knowing it's not just me and my family that is well. Looking to Indigenous teachings and knowledge to improve the well-being of all humans, living things, and the earth, you'll learn that there is no separation between the environment outside of you and within you, Chiuelif says. But due to colonization and white supremacy, people have been removed from their natural states and are unable to listen and find a balance between all life forms, according to Chiuelif. This is not just about indigenous people. It's just we can see it more clearly. But people, everyone, no matter who they are, have all been separated from the knowledge of who they are to some extent. How we view wellness as a whole has been shaped by capitalism, white supremacy, and settler colonialism, according to Freire, and it's separated us so much that we do believe wellness is an individual way of being, and we don't think it is a collective act, as a collective responsibility, Freire says, echoing Chiuelif's sentiments. Remembering and returning to traditional ways that are directly plugged into community and means of staying well and being well, which Freire reminds us all civilizations had at one point, is a step to achieving and sustaining optimal well-being for all. She also stresses the importance of creating and fostering relationships with the earth and all beings of the earth, instead of simply exploiting the earth for its resources. Our wellness being directly connected to the earth means she's feeling us constantly, but how are we feeling her? And instead of asking yourself why wellness needs to change, Chiuelif says, to ask yourself if what is currently presented to us as wellness is working. Although mainstream wellness has always been centered around the white person, and that's often what they've been taught, to think that they have to be the expert about everything, Chiuelif stresses, the importance of knowing that it's okay for white people to be the student. It's okay to be the one who lifts the indigenous and black voices up instead of trying to speak over it. Chiuelif also says, we need to start questioning what we are taught to believe and start looking at different perspectives, because unless we start looking from a different perspective and learning other people's knowledge, we're just going to be going in circles. Okay, well, that wraps up today's episode of Teen Magazine. Please be sure to listen next time. I hope that you have enjoyed it. My name is Bahati Mutisia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.